to Non-Native, the podcast that shares conversations between immigrants, expats, and interlopers. My name is Sarah, and in November 2014, I up sticks from Bristol in the United Kingdom to move to the west coast of the United States. Moving meant leaving behind friends, family, and the country I'd lived in my whole life for the promise of new experiences, meeting new people, and adapting to a new culture. In Non-Native, I speak with women who have moved around the world in pursuit of love, work, happiness, or adventure. Thanks so much for your feedback on last week's kickoff episode for season two, and welcome back. This week my guest is Karen, an American government worker currently based in Dubai, who has lived and worked across the Middle East for over 18 years. Karen and I met at a podcasting workshop last summer here in San Francisco before Non-Native had even launched. We kept in touch, and she joined me last month while she was back in the Bay Area to chat about how expat life has changed since she first moved abroad and some of the misconceptions about living in the Middle East. Enjoy listening. Okay, so hi, Karen.
Hi.
Thank you for joining me on Non-Native.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
We're in a bit of a different setup in case it sounds any different for the listeners. We're in a recording in a studio today rather than in my bedroom. So this makes a nice change.
Very nice.
I know that your parents inspired a lot of your travel. You're currently in Dubai, where you've been for 3 years, but that's certainly not the only place that you've been since your teens. So I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you began traveling and moving abroad and what brought you to Dubai now.
Sure. Well, really, it was my parents that were instrumental in my life. They were in the Peace Corps in the 1970s and decided that they wanted an international experience and went to Jamaica to teach English. And I was actually supposed to be born in Jamaica. I was a Peace Corps baby, and my mom got sick and had to be medevaced to Washington, D.C., and I ended up being born at George Washington Hospital. Little did I know that I would find myself in Washington, D.C. in my adult life, but that was really the start. It was their influence in my life that really played out throughout my childhood. They wanted to make sure that my brother and I continued to learn about the world, and so we had multiple exchange students live with us growing up from Denmark and Belgium, Germany and the Czech Republic, Japan. And that was very, very important to them to see the world beyond our town in Fairfield, California. So that's really where it started. I remember when my mom came home one day after a Toastmasters meeting, and she said, "Karen, you're not going to believe it, but there just so happens to be a sister city program, and they're looking for students to go abroad, and would you like to go to Japan?" And I was 16 years old, and I said, "Sure, Mom, why not?"
Wow.
And so that was my first experience in going abroad, and that was really the catalyst that opened up, I think, the world to me. It was my parents encouraging me and seeing the world at that young age in a culture that was very different than my own. I think it would have been different if I would have maybe had that first experience in Europe or a place that was maybe a little bit more familiar, but Japan was so very different. And my host sister then came and stayed with me after I stayed with her a summer. She came and lived with my family. So I always say, I think, you know, when people ask me, "So what does your family think about you living abroad?" I said, "Well, they kind of made me this way. Little did they know that I was going to take it this far." But it really has been really a cornerstone and a hallmark in my life to have an international career and to be an expat.
That's so wonderful that they did that for you. And also, like you say, you know, "Oh goodness, people wonder what my family thinks." And it's kind of like, well, you were bitten by the bug from an early stage and interested in travel and education. And it seems like those two things just kind of fused together. So were you living abroad throughout university, or was it once you graduated that you began to live abroad?
Yeah, that's a good question. Unlike a lot of university students, I did not do a study abroad experience, but I went to a small liberal arts Catholic college here in the Bay Area, Holy Names University in Oakland, and we had foreign exchange students that would come to learn English, and I became good friends with many of them. And that was really where I started to say, okay, I'm not having a study abroad experience, but I'm actually having it here on campus. And when I graduated, I said, okay, I think I actually now want to have that international experience that I didn't have in the classroom environment. And so my first time moving abroad was to the Czech Republic in 1994 to teach English at a language school in Brno.
Wonderful. And where have you been between the Czech Republic and Dubai now?
Yes. So from there, I went to Switzerland and worked for a boarding school, Maison American School, and continued on east to Istanbul, Turkey, where I taught third and fourth grade and was the program coordinator of a Turkish school. It was a fabulous experience. And then I said, okay, I really, really enjoy being in the classroom. And how can I use my degree? My degree was in international affairs and history, and I was teaching a lot of English, and I wanted to use my history degree. And I got a wonderful opportunity to teach at an all-girls school in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. And that was so insightful. That was in 1999. And I'm still in touch with those girls to this day. Of course, they're now in their late 30s and very successful in their careers. But that was a phenomenal experience. And I realized after Jeddah that although I loved teaching, I thought that there could be something more within the field of international education. So I went back and got a master's degree at the School for International Training in Brattleboro, Vermont, and then continued to go back to Dubai. And that was really my first time in Dubai in 2002 to 2004. Then Saudi Arabia, Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, for many years. And now I'm back in Dubai again. So really all over the Middle East.
That's incredible. That's such a long period of time to be traveling. Were you going back and forth between the US and the Middle East in that time, or were you fairly grounded in the countries you were living in at the time?
No, I'm fairly grounded in the countries that I was living in. I would come home in the summer and for Christmas, and I still come back to the United States quite frequently. But home really has been abroad for the past 18 years.
Wow. And so is there anything in particular that you have missed from the United States since you've moved abroad?
Oh, great question. Well, I think often one of the first things that we miss is food, right? Those favorite dishes or sauces or, you know, candy or cuisines that we can't find. But I think, you know, it's very different now living abroad in 2019 than it was in 1994. There was no internet at that time. It was very expensive to call back to the United States. There was no Skype. I mean, I remember very vividly calling my parents from a phone booth in the Czech Republic because I had no phone. And it costing, you know, $1.25 a minute, and me having enough change just to put into the phone booth to basically be on the phone with them for about 5 minutes for them to just know that I was okay and that I loved them and everything was okay. And now it's so different, right? We have Skype and WhatsApp voice and all of these other platforms that allow us to engage for free on the other side of the world. But going back to your question about what I miss the most, it's certain cuisines, it's little things like your favorite sushi place. But really, in Dubai, I can get everything. So I think that's different nowadays, like I said, than it was before. I miss my family. My parents get older, and my brother and his wife have two beautiful young girls, and as they grow up, there's times that you want to be with them, in sharing the holidays or a festivity or just maybe have a picnic in the summertime. And so I definitely don't take those times for granted when I come home. And I really make sure that the time that I have when I'm home is used well, and it is used with the ones that I love the most. I think it's also a huge challenge for anybody who has lived abroad or who's living abroad and comes home for short periods of time to visit family and friends. It's always a juggle of trying to have time to yourself and trying to have time with those that you love and balancing that, because everybody wants a piece of you. And then you're also trying to be comfortable in a place that you've called home for so long over the years. So I think as an expat, that's one of the things that I struggle the most with.
That's definitely, yeah, I appreciate that. So my husband and I, we've just come back from a period in the UK where we were there for Christmas and New Year, so the holidays, and we love that time. I love that time, the time I get to spend with friends and family, but it does feel like you're scheduling coffee with one person, lunch with another, dinner with another group of friends, never staying more than a couple of nights in the same bed and constantly moving around. And although it is a vacation, you definitely feel almost more tired at the end of it than you did at the beginning, just because you're trying to squeeze in those as many precious moments with people as possible.
Definitely. And it's really hard to plan your time with other people's schedule and your schedule, and often, you know, distances and driving, you know, 2 or 3 hours in one direction, you know, to the next. And I find that people will often say, or friends will say, well, okay, we just had this great dinner. Now, when am I going to see you again?
Right, they're already getting out their schedules, right, and planners.
And there can be a feeling of guilt, too, of, you know, really wanting to have more time, but not being able to squeeze it in the way that I think people expect when they don't understand what it's like to be living so far from home.
Definitely. Do you find that you've come to rely on, you mentioned how much technology has changed since you first lived abroad. Do you find that you've come to rely on things like WhatsApp? I know I'm plugged into WhatsApp groups and Facebook messages and particular scheduled times to Skype with people. Do you have those kind of systems in place to keep in touch when you're away?
Definitely. WhatsApp is probably the number one platform that I use, as well as Skype. And I think things like online banking and Amazon and Alexa and podcasts, like what we're doing today, have definitely made living abroad much easier. And there are pros and cons to that. I remember, you know, in the beginning, how great it was when I would get letters from my father, and he would write me every week, and I could expect a letter in the mail, and then I would do the traditional write a letter back, answer the questions he might have. And there's a beauty in that as well that I think that, you know, we don't have with technology. We have that instant ability to communicate, but there is something to be said as to being far and really feeling far, as opposed to knowing that we can have these quick calls and conversations or messages going back and forth.
Right. I definitely feel like since I've moved, I've taken to writing what I call fun post or fun mail. Just if I see a postcard that makes me think of a friend, or trying to be better at remembering birthdays and anniversaries and things like that, and sending, you know, cute things in the post so that people have something exciting to open, and then you get something in return. And it's, yeah, it's kind of nice. It's a slower way of communicating, but I think there's that certain sense of effort that you've put in, and it's more meaningful when you've come home from a long day at work and you're living abroad and you know, no one's in your time zone. They've all gone to sleep now, and you have this piece of mail waiting for you to open. I think there's something quite lovely about that.
Right. I have a few friends where we still write letters back and forth just for the art of writing letters, where I know I could say the same thing to them in a message very quickly. But I agree, there is a beauty to that that's nice to hold on to, and to find those letters stuffed in the back of a shoebox or a drawer, and to be able to reminisce is special.
So I wanted to talk about we've talked about what you miss, but what is it that you love? This could be from Dubai. This could be, I know you travel all over the Middle East and North Africa, so this could be from any one of the countries you visited. But is there anything in particular that you really love about where you live now?
Oh, wow. Well, I think there is a great sense of freedom in living abroad and seeing the world and meeting people from so many different places. And I know that sounds like an obvious, but what I have found, particularly in the Middle East and on the Arabian Peninsula, it's not just the Arabs that I interact with, the Saudis, the Bahrainis, the United Arab Emirates population, but all of the expats that come to live and work in the region. And so I have so many friends from many different backgrounds. I have friends from Denmark and Sudan, the Philippines, India, all over the world in this one place that I'm at. And I feel that it really adds a lot of richness to my life. I enjoy the Arab world so much. I've got to know a lot about this region of the world to the point that I think I am almost too comfortable because it is so second nature in living there for many years. And one of the new roles in my job is I have Central Asia in my portfolio. And I just started going to Central Asia in the past year and a half. And this past year, I went to Tajikistan and Turkmenistan and Kyrgyzstan. These are places that I knew nothing about. And it was so, so insightful to learn about a place that many of us don't have the opportunity to go to. So there's a sense of freedom. And I think that when you live abroad, it also really makes you learn about yourself. You are forced to figure out who you are, to know yourself well, to hold your own ground differently than I think than when you're on your own in your own culture. And I loved that opportunity to stretch and to grow. And sometimes things can be overwhelming, you not understanding a language or certain cultural aspect, and kind of once you overcome some of these challenges, it just opens up more opportunities to learn more and to grow, you know, yourself. And that's what I always loved. I felt like there's constantly an ability to grow more so when I'm kind of outside of my comfort zone. And so it's putting yourself outside of your comfort zone that makes, I think, a pretty big difference.
I think from an outsider's view looking in, like the Middle Eastern territories can look like a very intimidating place mm-hmm. to live and to visit. And you mentioned one of the things you love is overcoming kind of challenges, be they cultural or linguistic. Is there anything in particular that stands out when you first moved that you had to adapt to or change to or really allow to educate yourself on?
Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, one of the biggest challenges was moving to Saudi Arabia. So I lived there twice. I lived in Jeddah, which is on the Red Sea, and in Riyadh. And they're very two different cities within Saudi Arabia, very unique, Riyadh being the capital and landlocked, Jeddah being a bit more open, but very close, almost halfway in between Mecca and Medina. So a lot of people coming from around the world to go to these two holy sites, which would greatly influence, you know, this particular city. But when I moved to Saudi Arabia, you know, I had to wear the abaya, women couldn't drive. In many situations, men and women are segregated. And so there was a huge learning curve that went with that. But it's, I mean, that cliche, when in Rome, do as the Romans, right? So I really got a chance to dive into Saudi culture and get to know my Saudi students and Saudi friends over the years, and to really put aside, I think, a lot of these things that are very different for us, maybe in the United States, that are a part of the culture. And what I learned was that You know, when people ask me, because Dubai is so different than Saudi Arabia, and they say, well, do you miss Saudi? And I go back to Saudi very frequently with my job. And I say, you know, the place is great. I've been there for many years. So I know it quite well. But it's really the people that I loved so much about Saudi Arabia. And that was a true gift. You know, as an expat, I think in Saudi Arabia, there weren't as many opportunities to do things. And so I kind of would explain it like the Siri aisle in the United States. If you go to the cereal aisle in, you know, Whole Foods or Safeway, you'll notice there's going to be a whole aisle of boxes to choose from. And you will probably find multiple boxes and many that you will like and some that you won't, but you'll have a lot of options. And I felt in Saudi Arabia, the cereal aisle, and it really was true, was much smaller and there weren't as many options, but I don't need many options. I just need the options that work best for me. And so out of that expat experience, I learned to scuba dive. I ran my first, you know, marathon. I got to started a book club, got to, you know, be friends with people that I would maybe never have the opportunity to engage with. And that was in and of itself priceless.
I like that it sounds like you were kind of making your own opportunities, even though the restrictions of the country, maybe you felt like you couldn't do various things. It allowed you to explore mm-hmm. different routes like fitness, like scuba diving, like starting a book club. Are there any misconceptions about Saudi Arabia or Dubai that you find frustrating as an expat, given how long that you've lived there? Is there anything that really bothers you about how those countries are viewed?
Yes. Usually when someone finds out that I live in the Middle East or that I'm going back to the Middle East after being in the United States, they'll say, now be safe. Are you really safe over there? Is everything really okay? And I've got to tell you, I feel very safe in the Middle East. Often more safe there than sometimes I do when I am home in America. When I go to an ATM machine, my street smart is a little bit higher than it is maybe in some of those countries. People are so nice. They're so hospitable. There is really a sense of hospitality in the Arab world that I have never seen any place in all my travels. There is, the minute you walk into someone's home, whether they serve you dates or coffee or, you know, tea and biscuits, there is a genuineness to make you feel welcomed as a guest. And that is really a hallmark to their culture. And I have learned how to be a better host, whether it's throwing a dinner party or just meeting someone for the first time. They have definitely showed me how to do that in a way that I didn't know before living in the region.
Okay, so this is a question that I like to ask, and I think your background and the way your parents raised you may influence this, but I wonder what the idea of immigration and freedom to move and work and live abroad means to you.
Oh, that's a very deep personal question that I would absolutely love to answer. Well, both of my parents, my mom's parents were both immigrants from Hungary, and my dad's father was immigrated from the Czech Republic. Two brothers immigrated in 1912, and they both settled in Cleveland, Ohio. And as you know, my parents were always telling us stories about their Eastern European heritage. And of course, we had all of the food in the house and just that strong sense of identity of immigrants and how we made our way in America. And so when I first moved abroad, I moved to the Czech Republic. And 2 weeks after being in the Czech Republic, it was Christmas. And I had nowhere to go for Christmas. And so I had a chance to contact my cousin, who I had never met before, and took a train to Prague and met them getting off the train. Of course, remember, no Skype, no, you know, cell phones or anything like that. And spent Christmas Eve in the village of my great-grandfather's town. there in the village, in his village. And it was absolutely eye-opening to think about the sacrifices that they made to come to this country and start anew. A year and a half ago, we went to Hungary and we got in the car and went to my mom's, her two parents' villages, and got to see where they came from and saw my grandfather's house. And I was very humbled that they would go to such efforts. So on a personal level, I realized the sacrifices that it takes to be an immigrant, whatever reason brings you to a new country to want to settle. And I think that there is, I think wherever you go, you're always going in search of an opportunity, right? And that we are all enriched by the people that are in our lives, whether we've been in the same place for generation after generation, or we're a new generation that is just starting anew.
That's lovely. So I think we're probably coming to the end of the episode now. Is there anything else you wanted to add before I ask about like where people can find you?
I would say, you know, I work, the work that I do helps international students come to the United States and to pursue their dreams to study on a U.S. college or university campus, and to then go back home and give to, you know, their society and their environment and their family. And what I would say is that for people to think outside of the box and consider getting outside of your comfort zone, whatever that might be. And that might be going abroad or going to a different state, or maybe having dinner with a group of people that you've never met before that come from a different culture. But just taking the opportunity to be a little uncomfortable, because often the best growth that happens is by being slightly uncomfortable. So take that challenge and see how you might be able to apply that to your life.
That feels like, and I was thinking while you were talking that this would have been a good question as well. But it's what advice you would have for anybody who is thinking about moving or living abroad.
Oh, I would say that life is very short and you don't have to do it as long as I did. I mean, I realize that it's been quite a journey, but just try it for a year, try it for a semester, try it for a few weeks. I think there are so many opportunities with things like Airbnb and couch surfing, as well as, you know, discounted tickets, that the world is much smaller than it was. And to know that there are going to be, you know, times that you might be a little scared or uncomfortable, but to take that challenge and to go for it. Life's way too short to just stay in one place.
Awesome. And so if anybody wanted to follow your adventures or your work abroad, where could they find you?
Well, I do have a LinkedIn page. So my name is Karen Bauer, and you can find me on that LinkedIn page.
We can link that in the show notes as well.
Sure. And then as far as the work that I do, I work for a State Department program called Education USA. And we have our website, so it's educationusa.state.gov. And this is a great website for international students to go to if they're thinking about applying to colleges and universities in the United States at any level. High school program, undergrad, grad, PhD program, you can find an international advisor in over 177 countries around the world and meet with an advisor for free. And so the work that I do is through Education USA. It's a free resource, and it's great to say that we have offices worldwide.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Karen.
Thank you. It's been lovely.
Thanks for listening to Non-Native. If you like what you heard, subscribe and rate us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at ShipshapeBF or over on my blog, shipshapeinbristolfashion.com.